Matthew 26. We read the text already. I'd like for you to look at, if you would, verse 41, just to kind of refresh our minds on what we're going to be talking about this morning. Verse 41 says in Matthew 26, "Watch and pray, that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Let me say that again. Matter of fact, you know, I think it would be good if we just read this verse together, all together. Ready? Verse 41, let's begin. "Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." You ever feel like you're in a rut? You know, like Brother King would say, you ever feel like you got your foot stuck in a lard bucket? You know, and that's how you feel like your life is just sort of going along the way? Well, I could just tell you just bluntly this morning, if you feel like you're in a rut, that is in your life, the reason why that is because your walk with God isn't where it needs to be. Plain and simple. God says that He strengthens us. And the way that He strengthens us is when we pray. He says, if you'll watch and you'll pray with me, then I'll give you enough strength so that you won't fall to those temptations. That's good stuff. That's what He said. That ye enter not into temptation. Do you ever feel so weak in your life that you can't overcome that besetting sin? That thing that just keeps coming back into your life? Let me give you an example. Let's say one of you here, you struggle with smoking. And you know you need to quit. You know you need to stop. And so you try, you know, along the way to quit. You try through life to stop doing it. Why? Well, it might be that you want to be right with God. And you know, like just something in you tells you, you don't even know the verses, but God doesn't approve of it. And so you know you need to quit, and that's your really one thing that's in your mind. It might be that you want to take care of your health, because we know the stories of those who smoke, right? And then their health is destroyed because of this habit. Of course, we always have the excuse, well, Grandma, she lived to 92 and smoked every day, a whole pack, you know. And, you know, we can come up with those excuses if we want, but we well know, don't we, that our health is destroyed by smoking. Yeah. And so that might be a motive. You say, I want to take care of my health. You might just say, well, I'm tired of smelling like a chimney that has cologne on it or something. Whatever the case may be, you don't want to smoke anywhere anymore, but here's the reality is you can't seem to stop. That's like being in a rut. And in the end, it's a spiritual problem. Now, your problem might not be smoking, but we all have a besetting sin. We all, like we said last week, have that thing that likes to come back and just surround us and tempt us and suck us back in. And we need to address those things. We need to gain victory over those things. And we've tried, it seems, we've tried and we can't gain victory. We might feel this morning, you might feel this morning that you have issues in relationships, potentially in your family. And so when you look at your marriage relationship, you might say, my marriage is fragile. My marriage relationship is weak. We're not as strong as we should be in our relationship. It might be that you and your spouse have not been on good terms today. Could be. Now, I'm not judging anybody. I didn't see any tiff this morning in the parking lot, but it might be that there's been a little bit of a struggle between you and your spouse. Could be. And so you want to get things right. You want to do things right, but it seems like things are so fragile that at times when you're around your spouse, you're walking on eggshells, you know, because you don't want to just tiptoeing around. You just don't want to do that one thing or say that one thing that just sets them off. or sparks or lights their fire, you know, because we don't want that. In our relationships, whether it be our spouse or somebody in our family or a friend, I mean, we just have, at times, weaknesses and fragileness in our relationships. And I want to say to you this morning that as Christians, God can strengthen us in those things. He can give us strength over these struggles, these lard bucket experiences of life, these ruts, these struggles, whether it's relational or sin or some sort of a doubt that we're having. He wants us to have strength. Christians tend to find out the hard way, though. Did you hear that? Christians have a tendency to find out the hard way that they're not nearly as strong as they think they are. And they often end up living lives of weakness. Often living lives with fragile relationships. Tending to fall to every whim of temptation that comes along the way. Now, last week, Jesus said to his disciples, remember, and that, I mean, what a message to start things off, really, in our three-part series. Last week, Jesus said to his disciples, you know, you're not quite as strong as you think you are. And they said, what? Now, Jesus, we've been walking with you for about 3.5 years. And Jesus said, oh, yeah, you're going to deny me tonight. You are going to deny me tonight. You know what Peter said? He said, everybody's going to, you know what? If everybody denies you, I'm not going to deny you. Jesus looked at Peter and told him how it is. You, Peter, are going to deny me 3 times tonight. You know what that means? That means Peter thought he was strong, but Jesus said, you're not strong. You are weak. You're fragile. And see, the disciples are no different than we are. They thought they were strong. We think we're strong. Jesus says, you're going to fall to this temptation. Jesus says, we're going to fall to our temptations. Jesus says to the disciples, watch and pray with me so that you won't fall to temptation. Jesus says to us today, watch and pray with me so that you won't fall to temptation. The disciples slept. They didn't pray. Do you know what you and I are doing? The same. You know why you're weak? You know why you doubt? You know why you struggle? You know why you can't kick it? You know why your foot's in a lard bucket? You know why you're in a rut? Because you're weak. You're fragile. But you think you're strong. Those are tough words. These are tough words, but sometimes we just need to hear it how it is, right? We want help this morning. We need to see our face in a glass clearly. We need to see who we really are. And Jesus says, you're weak. And we say, oh, I'm not weak. I'm pretty strong, you know. I'm pretty sure I can handle this. Now this, today I said, is our second part. Last week we started this three-part series. It's all right here in Matthew 26. And by the way, for those of you who are our guests, we're preaching through the book of Matthew. We've been in the book of Matthew for, Lord willing, next week I'll give you a count how many sermons. It's well over 100 sermons. We've been in the book of Matthew for over 3 years now. And we're closing up. We're getting close to the end, aren't we? I don't know how long it's going to take us to get all the way through Matthew 28. Could take us the rest of this year, heavens. We're right here in the middle of Matthew 26. Jesus is about to be taken. He's about to be taken and judged unrighteously. He's going to bear our sins on the cross. And this is an absolutely amazing testimony of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ that we're about to launch into in his passion. Last week, we started by saying, like Jesus said to his disciples, You're going to deny me. You're going to leave me. And my question last week was, will you leave? And so we started our series, Will You Leave? You mean leave Fall City? You mean leave my spouse? Do you mean leave the church? What do you mean, Pastor? No. Will you leave God? Will you walk away from Him? Your relationship with Him, your closeness to Him. Seeking something else, leaving God behind. That's the question. And today is part two, will you leave? I think today is really the exciting part of this three-part series. I mean, because here, Jesus is telling the disciples how to not leave. This is the answer. He says, last week you're going to deny me. They said, oh, we won't deny you. This week Jesus says, if you will watch and pray, then you will avoid temptation. This is the good news. This is the answer. Will you leave? This is how you get strength. The disciples needed strength because they're weak. Jesus said that in verse 41. Remember, let's look at it again, the last phrase. He says, the spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is what? He says, that's what we are. We're weak. And we need strength, but how do we get strength? You can't muster it up or gain it by discipline or go to the gym. We get strength only one way. I brought up smoking. You want to stop? Maybe it's something else. Maybe you have some other besetting sin. You want to stop? Well, of course I want to stop, Pastor. I've been trying, and I want to stop. Well, you're weak. How do you stop? How do you get strength? You've been doubting? You've been struggling? Are you fragile? Do you have fragile relationships? How's your marriage? How's your relationship with your coworkers or your neighbors? Your family, your friends. Do we want to see those things to gain strength so that we don't have these struggles and doubts and worries and wonders? But we can look at God and He will give us strength. And the only way we gain strength over these struggles that we have in life is by determining to pray, by determining to make number one a relationship with God, Him and me alone. Primary. He says you do that, He'll strengthen you. This is the anguish of Gethsemane. The anguish of Gethsemane. We don't pass over this lightly, do we? This portion of Scripture. I think it needs to be dissected. I think we need to take a look at the contrast in this passage this morning. It's a beautiful contrast. You know why? Because Jesus is paramount. And you and I are right in our place. The contrast here, which I believe is the point of this, to point out Jesus versus the disciples. Here's what Jesus did. Here's what the disciples did. Who came out victorious? That one's easy, right? Jesus. Jesus went to His death. Why? Because it was the will of His Father. In our text, Jesus says, not my will, but thine be done. Jesus went to the cross as a sacrificial Passover lamb because that was God's will. Now let's see this contrast. And as we see Jesus going to His knees, and as in other portions, in parallel passages, it teaches that He prayed, as it were, great sweat drops of blood in His passion, in His burden, in His struggle, as He sought the face of God to do the will of God. Jesus prayed. But you know what the disciples were doing? They were sleeping. That's quite the contrast. I believe Jesus would have been vulnerable without prayer. He was exceeding sorrowful. Look at verse 36. Please follow. Then cometh Jesus unto them, unto a place called Gethsemane, and said unto His disciples, sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. See that? Pray. He took him, Peter, and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch with me. Now Jesus leaves with his core disciples, the three, Peter, James, and John. He pulls them aside. He begins to be very sorrowful, it says. And we can imagine, but that's all we can do. We don't know what Jesus is going through. We don't understand what his agony looked like. But there it was. He requests to the disciples that they would watch. The implication here is that they would stay with him, stay awake, and be going on praying. So he prayed, verse 39. He went a little further and went on his face and he prayed, saying, Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. So as Jesus prayed, he asked that the cup would pass from him. And as he's seeking God's face, his desire in the end is to do what God the Father's will is. What's your will, my Father? And the answer, or rather the the answer is a right way to say this, to this prayer that Jesus prayed, is that the cross would be unavoidable, that Jesus would go to the cross. That would be what God's will is. But Jesus prayed. Jesus told his disciples to stay awake and to pray. Because if they did, they would then avoid temptation. Now let's think about this for a minute. Verse 40 and 41, and then let's think about it for a minute. He cometh to his disciples, and findeth them, look at that, findeth them asleep. And saith unto Peter, What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. You know what? It's doubtful that Jesus is saying here. It's doubtful that he is saying that they wouldn't fall. Whenever he says not to fall into temptation, he's not telling them that they wouldn't fall asleep. Let's consider what Jesus just told them, just maybe a few hours before this or less. He just told them that they would all defect. He says, you're all going to deny me. Now remember that Peter said, not me. All the disciples said, not me. Now they have an opportunity to strengthen themselves against this temptation that Jesus told them that was going to come, that they would deny, that they would go away. But they're sleeping. What does that say? Think about it. Jesus told them they would deny him. Jesus also told them, watch and pray with me that you'll avoid this temptation, and they're sleeping. What does that say? Well, it says that, A, they really didn't believe that they would defect from Jesus. Even though Jesus said they would, they didn't believe Jesus. So they didn't have faith in what Jesus said. Next, and I think we as Christians fall into the category of both of these. But next, they didn't really believe prayer would make any difference. You and I are vulnerable to sin. We're vulnerable to besetting sin, to temptation, when we don't pray. Last week, some of y'all have joked around with my family. Last week from the pulpit I said, I never get sick. Yep. That was a boastful thing to say, wasn't it? Some of you were like, whoa, stay away from him, you know. It was good for you to stay away from me because, buddy, I got sick. And it didn't take long because I said it on Sunday and I got sick on Monday. And I went down hard. My wife can testify. Anybody who's been in the house, I think I was as sick this week as I've ever been in my whole life that I can remember. It was rough. I guess we could say I wasn't as strong as I thought I was. You know, I believe it was of the Lord that I got sick, though. Not just to make a joke or... You know, just to prove that I'm not as strong as I thought I was. But because while I was at home last week, it was just him and me. A lot. You know, the family would leave, go through the day, the week, you know, and there I am. I can't even move. I'm about as sick as I've ever been. I'm pretty stinking miserable. I can't sleep. I can't sit. I can't. There was only one position I was comfortable. Guess what it was? It was on my knees. You got it. You know what I found last week, starting on Tuesday, whenever this thing really took root in me, and I was really down, and all it was God and me. I realized that I hadn't been with God for a long time. I had to spend a couple days just getting reacquainted with Him. You know, I'm ashamed to say that. I was telling Melissa about this, trying to relate it to her. Her and I have had times in our marriage where we weren't as close as we should be. And my guess is that any one of you are married for any length of time, then you would connect with that. There's times in marriage where you're not as close, you know. And let's say that you've grown apart in your marriage relationship. You're doing your thing. He, she's doing their thing. And you're living two separate lives, really, but you live in the same house. It's kind of miserable, isn't it? But that's what you do. And then you get locked in the same house with nobody but you and them for 4 days. That's what was with me and God. We're just kind of, I'm doing my thing. God's over here. And now God and I are in the house for 4 days. And I had to spend the first 2, maybe 3 days just getting reacquainted with Him. You know why we're vulnerable? Because why we're weak? It's because our relationship with God is weak. Not vulnerable to sickness. That's mercy this week. I believe God showed mercy on me to bring me down to my knees that way that I might seek His face, to be right with Him and close to Him again. God does those things for us. He puts us in the hospital. He puts us on our knees. He lets us go through hard things so that we might look up to Him and say, I'm not where I should be. You know that's true. But just like that's true in our lives because of the mercy of God, we're vulnerable in our life, we're weak in our life, we're not as strong as we should be because our relationship with God is weak. It's weak. How do you think a teenager is going to do who doesn't have a walk with God and they go to a party? Let's just be real about this. Can we do that? A teenager who's not close to God, claims to be saved, not close to God, hanging with the wrong friends, goes to a party. You know what I'm talking about? A party. There's drinking there. What do you think they're going to do? I'll never drink. Oh, really? You think you're strong? Okay. Drinking, friends, other things that are associated with party, the party life. I counseled a teen girl a couple years ago about this. Came to our church. We sat in my office and I said, listen, what are you doing? You know? Oh, it's just party, you know. It's not a big deal. Oh, no, no. It is a big deal. You can't go to that stuff. You can't be around it. You can't do this. You're vulnerable. She didn't listen. She went, she partied, she had tons of fun. She got pregnant, dropped out of school. She didn't go to church. Now, what's the future hold? Can God straighten it out, of course? Just saying, listen, we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable. Parents, you would be wise to not let your kids go to that stuff. Your kids are vulnerable. Adults and teens with cell phones that are unchecked. I don't have my phone with me. It's on my desk, but we let our teenagers have phones. And we don't check them. We don't keep an eye on this stuff. There's no safeguards. What do you think the temptation that's there with cell phones unchecked, with teens or adults? It's not good. Our teens are vulnerable. You and I are vulnerable. These things become temptation to us. Our kids are vulnerable when they're left to themselves. And parents who won't teach their children and parent their children. Children are mischievous. I know that's true. You know, I would always, in the past, I've said things like this, and I've heard a lot of folks along the way joke about things like this. And when our kids are in the home and it's quiet, we know something's wrong. They're doing something bad, okay? There's like a 99% chance something bad is happening. Whenever I am at home, I'm doing something, I'm in the middle of something, and then I stop and I think to myself, okay, all four of my kids are at home right now and I can't hear anything. Something bad is going on right now. So we have to deal with that. Our children are vulnerable, listen to this, when they're left alone. Does that mean we don't ever leave our kids alone? Hey, listen, we need to know what our kids are doing all the time. We need to know what our children are being involved with all of the time. Listen, I see kids walking around Fall City all the time. That should not be your kids. Can I say that again? I see kids walking the streets of Fall City all of the time. That should not be your kids, unless you're with them. Did you hear that? Your children are vulnerable. We cannot leave them to the elements of this world and expect that they're going to learn holiness and righteousness and godliness. They need godly parents because they're vulnerable. It's like a guy who wants to stop drinking, but he keeps going to the bar. You know? He's vulnerable. He wants to stop, but he keeps going to the bar. You can't do that. If you want to stop drinking, stop buying beer. Stop going to the bar. Stop hanging out with guys that do it. You're vulnerable. You're weak. You see, young people are attracted to each other. Listen, that's a normal thing. That's nature. Girls and guys are supposed to like each other. But it's not a good thing whenever girls and guys, teens who like each other, even young adults, and then they're left alone. What do you think is going to happen? Oh, we're just going to sit here and look at each other in the eyes, stare. Boy, that gets boring. Doesn't take long. You're going to take another step. How long do you think before you're taking steps that are leading you down a path? Ooh, you never thought you'd go down that one. Your kids should not be going on dates alone. Not wise. It's not wise. Why? Because they're vulnerable. They're weak. They're not strong. They think they are. They might even convince you, Mom, I won't do it. I won't do this, I won't do that, I'm going to do right. And so, you know, your kids never lie, they never do anything, you know, so you're like, okay, I trust you, you know. They say I'm going to go to, practice, or I'm going to go to my friend's house, and then they go, instead of going where they said they were going to go, they went somewhere else, you know. Our children are vulnerable. One guy said it this way. When it comes to the relational sexual thing, he says a fire in the house is totally fine. Did you listen to this? A fire in the house is totally fine as long as it's in the fireplace. And relationships that get sexual are totally fine as long as they're in the bounds of God's direction here. Marriage. Kids get involved with this stuff and it's like getting fire out of the fireplace, and that destroys. We have a tendency to be vulnerable to temptations. But you know what we don't do when it comes to these things and a host of other things that we get tempted with? We won't pray. We just want to, you know, just try to overcome this stuff. When Jesus says prayer is the only thing that can give us the strength that we need to consistently overcome these temptations. If Christians want to overcome temptation, they're going to have faith in Christ's warnings. Gain strength through prayer. You know why you keep struggling? Because you won't pray. I don't know any other way to say this, and I want to be nice to you because I love you this morning, but I just have to be blunt this morning. We're like the disciples, and Jesus says, if you'll pray, you'll avoid temptation. And they slept, and that's what we do. When it's time to pray, we're sleeping. Prayer, what do you mean? I did that one time. I prayed, and I mean to tell you what, it didn't work. Really? So you think if you just pray for like 3 minutes, one time, you're going to avoid the temptation for the rest of your life? Nope. Day in, day out. Hey, let's just listen to how long do you pray? What did Jesus say to the disciples? First of all, before I say this to you, I don't think that there is a time limit on prayer. You didn't really get a hold of God until you prayed for 47 minutes. 47, boom, the light of God shows up. No, there's no time limit here. But Jesus did say these words. What? Could you not watch and pray 1 hour? Just a thought. We want victory, but we don't want it enough to spend the appropriate amount of time on our knees consistently, day in and day out. So Jesus warned them, but as I said, the disciples wouldn't make it a priority. Look at verse 42. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. He left them, went away again, prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to the disciples and saith unto them, sleep on now and take your rest. Well, why did he say that? Is he approving of their sleep? No. Here's what he's saying. You go ahead and sleep on because it's too late to pray now. It's too late. They slept it away. And he goes on and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. You know what he just said? Go ahead and sleep because it's too late to pray. Verse 46, arise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. So the sleepers who said, by the way, for whom they said they would die for Jesus, they're sleeping. They lost their opportunity to gain the strength to avoid temptation. But the contrast here is that Jesus has prayed in agony, as it were, great sweat drops of blood, and he rises, watch this, he rises with poise, and he advances those that came to betray him. And he goes on to victory at the cross because he prayed. And the disciples squandered and ran away like ants because they didn't pray. God will supply the strength that we need, and all you got to do is pray. He will supply all the strength you need, and all you need to do is pray. I mean, let's face it. We fall because we don't pray. We sleep when we should be praying. Remember, years ago, we had an all-night, I've mentioned this to some of you, we had an all-night prayer meeting in St. Joe. And God willing, Fall City, we're going to do this someday. I want to. I believe it's a really rich thing to do. And we prayed all night. We showed up with a group of about 7 of us men, and some teens were there. I was a youth pastor at the time, and so we had maybe 4 or so men, myself, and a couple teenage guys that were ambitious. One of them didn't even make it till like 1 in the morning. He was out on the floor. But we prayed at the pulpit. I remember it was 7 of us, and basically we talked about what we're going to do all night. We're going to pray for a whole hour at certain places in the building all night long. So we started off at the pulpit, and all the men, we put our hands on the pulpit like this. And we prayed sort of a round robin for a whole hour. Like, oh man, we prayed that God would put power in the pulpit, you know? And then we went from the pulpit and we walked on the pews. We took our shoes off like this. All in a line. And we prayed back and forth for an hour. After we did that, we were like, ooh, man, this is good. So we went to the Sunday school rooms and we just walked up and down the Sunday school rooms, because once it gets like 2 in the morning, you don't get on your knees or sit down anywhere. You're like, Father, I love. You know how it is, right? So everything we did after that, we were walking around the property. We walked in the Sunday school rooms. Heavens, we were praying in the bathrooms. Because you never know. You know, God works everywhere, right? So we're praying in the halls. We're praying in the Sunday school rooms. We're praying in the bathrooms. You know, we're praying in the nursery for all the babies, you know, for an hour. Then at 4 in the morning, we're like, you know what? Let's do like Jericho and walk around the whole property 7 times praying. It was awesome, man. We just, that's a great idea. Plus, we were getting like, all right, like we're running out of ideas here, you know. So we started walking around the building. We prayed, and man, we were just in a straight line. And we were joking some in between our prayer sessions about who was going to blow the trumpets and things. And we prayed, and we prayed, and we made one lap. We made another lap. We made another lap. And then we saw one of the buses had graffiti on it that wasn't there on the previous lap. Somebody was spray painting our buses while we were walking around the property at 4 in the morning. And I want you to know, that got a hold of me because I'm a fraidy cat, okay? I was like, somebody is here. And then one of the guys with us, he took off towards it. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, he's a big guy. Brother Jim Wolfram, he's going to be preaching for us, you know, a little bit. He's just not afraid of anything. He ran over there. He was going to see if he could catch them, you know. They weren't anywhere around that. But you know what that did? It stirred us up. The devil doesn't like what we're doing here. He's trying to attack us already. Man, we could have prayed on our knees after that. We weren't tired. God already stirred us up, strengthened us. You know why? Because prayer strengthens you. You're weak because you won't pray. That's it. There is no magic potion here. You cannot overcome your temptation, whatever it is, because you won't pray. It's your walk with God. You know, we have struggles and we want the pastor to pray for us. And I want to pray for you, so don't hesitate to call me. That's why I'm here, actually. I want to partner with you in prayer. But that's key. Partner. Like, don't ask me to pray and then you not pray. Because prayer strengthens you. You need prayer. We can't get up day after day after day and not pray and expect to have strength. Expect that our doubts, our struggles, our temptations, stuff that keeps dragging us back into the lard bucket, you see? All those things, we want to avoid them and get them out of our life. They keep coming back and dragging us down under again because we won't have a consistent walk with God. Prayer. That's what God showed me this week, you know? I've been studying this sermon for 3 weeks. This week I, you know, didn't have a lot of energy. And so whenever I felt like I had any energy at all, I pulled my laptop out and I would work on this sermon. And I had 4 different introductions to this thing, at least. I mean, full-fledged introductions. And all of them got deleted and erased, because in the end, I really believe the reason why, along the way, God allowed me to go through what I went through is so that I could see that I'm not as strong as I think I am. But on a spiritual note, we'll never be able to overcome anything if our walk with God stinks. You'll be weak, fragile. And so if you feel like you're in a rut, it's because your walk with God is not where it needs to be. It's because you don't pray, you know, every day. Well, I pray when I'm driving. Let's get on our knees. You know, listen, I'm not going to get on to anybody about this morning. Let me rephrase that because I might be getting on to you. I don't want you to feel like just because I said this, what I'm about to say, that you have to just do something because I said it, okay? But it bothers me that I don't hardly ever see anyone at the altar. That bothers me. We have altar call every Sunday. Every Sunday night and every Thursday night, and I don't hardly ever see anybody there. And it's been that way for almost 5 years now. What's that mean? It doesn't mean that, again, like I was saying, it doesn't mean that you need to rush now to the altar because it's going to fix all your problems. But hey, listen, right up here, this is where we get our strength. You get your strength on your knees. And if you don't do it on your knees, you aren't going to get it. Prayer strengthens us. And you will not be strong if you don't pray. The end. And so, if God works in your heart, you need to meet him at the altar. If God, works in you in a particular way, you need to get on your knees. And you need to go to him in prayer that he might strengthen you. But not just on Sundays, friend, every day. Every day. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much. Lord, what